Racer Radio on AM 1170, The Answer, is sponsored by Love Radio Network.
Air on. Power on.
Okay, it's time to take your place on the starting grid and get ready for Racer Radio. Your host, Dave Stahl, about to take you for a white-knuckled lap around the motorsports industry, covering everything from top-notch national drivers and crew chiefs right down to your local kid racers and racetracks. Watch for the apex, because here comes Racer Radio with Dave Stahl.
All right, folks, welcome to Racer Radio, FM 96.1 AM 1170. The Answer. This segment is brought to you by San Diego Carburetor and Fuel Injection, 6622 University Avenue in San Diego. Go to SD Carb for all your automotive needs, whether it's carburation, fuel injection, all can be taken care of right there at San Diego Carburetor. Go to sdcarb.com. When you call them, talk to my good buddy and tell him that you heard it right here on FM 96.1 AM 1170, The Answer. Hey, there's a movie that just came out called Rapid Response. I've interviewed Michael Miles a few times. Michael is from Indianapolis, and he's heavily involved in the open wheels community. And I actually went and watched the movie. I have this interview was prior to me watching the movie, so I'm going to probably bring him back and do another post interview, because that movie was amazing. Whether you're a car guy or girl, makes no difference. It's a documentary, and it's a history of saving lives. Sit back, take a listen.
You know, folks, there's a book out and a movie that you're definitely going to want to put on your list of things to do, and that is Rapid Response. Rapid Response is an interesting book. I'm in the middle of it right now, and to help explain it even better, I've got Michael Miles. He's a co-director of the movie side of it, Rapid Response. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So you live, what, in Indianapolis?
No, I'm a Los Angeles-based, but I grew up, I was born and raised in Indianapolis.
That's what I thought. Yeah, because we had you on KUSI. Folks, if you want to go to Google and put my website or put my name in and then hit click on YouTube, there's a nice video of Michael and myself talking about it as well. So if you want to see a kind of a video, that's fine. So did you read the book first and then decide, oh my gosh, we have to make a movie out of this?
Yeah, it's actually kind of a funny story. The book, the first edition of the book came out in, I think, 2007 or late 2006. And I was living in Indianapolis back at that time, kind of after college, and I was in my dad's medical office and happened to find the book just in a drawer while I was looking for a pen, and it caught my eye as an IndyCar racing fan, and I picked it up and read it in one night. And while I was reading it, it was mentioning a lot of these, crashes that they learned, a lot of stuff for safety from, and I was trying to visualize it, and there were things I hadn't seen, and YouTube was kind of in its infancy, so I basically went through YouTube looking this stuff up so I could see what Dr. Olvey was writing about and really understand it a little bit better. And I realized I had basically gone through the entire book in one night reading it and watching the clips, and I said, this would make a perfect documentary. So that's kind of the way that I read the book and decided I wanted to make it a movie right then.
You know, it's funny how things happen for a reason, you know. Whether you meet somebody that changes your life, or you open a drawer and there's a book that catches your eye and it changes your life. I mean, and so far I haven't got that deep into the book yet, but I'm at the Poncho Carter. I just finished that chapter, who also is one of my idols. And I'm sure the movie is going to be pretty... It's going to be hard. I mean, that's a big book, but I'm sure the movie is going to be pretty representative of the book.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a companion piece. I mean, we talk about a lot of the things that are in the book and a couple of things that aren't. Obviously, the book is so big and so detailed and covers so much time for an hour and a half movie. You can't get all of that information in there, so we had to kind of narrow down to a few of the really big specific things that they talk about in the book that moved safety forward. And also just some of the things that affected both Dr. Stephen Ovey and his kind of compatriot partner and all their research and labor over the last, 30 or 40 years, Dr. Terry Trammell, and really kind of demonstrate what drove them forward. It's kind of a funny story, but there's, times in the book where both of them are talked about that they just really didn't know if they wanted to do it, whether they wanted to be involved, because it was a hard thing, and it was emotionally hard on them to see drivers that they had built a relationship with getting hurt, and it was hard work that they weren't, they weren't really getting rich off of. They were just kind of having their expenses for doing it covered. And personally, I guess the other side is I was a patient of Dr. Terry Trammell. He did surgery on me when I was a kid, and so I knew him, and I knew how good of a doctor he was, and that's actually, he personally ended up introducing me to Dr. Ovey, and that set me on the path.
So how did that relationship begin? Did your folks take you to him? Was he specializing in what was wrong with you? How did that come about?
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Terry Trammell is such a world-renowned orthopedic surgeon, and I was born with some physical disabilities, and it was my left arm and hand are smaller and shorter from birth than my other side, and about 5 years old, I started developing scoliosis, which is incredibly rare in boys that age especially. And they speculated, and scoliosis is curvature of the spine, and they speculated at the time it was because I was misweighted with my arms being different sizes, that it was making my spine curve. And Dr. Trammell, because he's such a world-renowned scoliosis surgical expert, I ended up going to see him, and he's the one who treated me from the time I was about 5 or 6 years old up until I was in my late 20s even. And, as a young boy, you're terrified to go to the doctor. And what was cool was I would go, and he had all the memorabilia of signed stuff, helmets, and pictures from the race car drivers. And then he would tell me stories once he realized that I was interested in that stuff, and it helped calm me down and, kind of build that trust relationship. And he's just that kind of doctor, has a great, human touch.
Well, I have to say, when you came to KUSI, and did the segment with me, and then I found out later that you had had some of these medical issues, I got to tell you, he did an awesome job, because I couldn't even tell that you had any disabilities at all. I mean, you seemed, normally fine. I wish I weighed what you weigh, but that's another story. But I was very impressed. So job well done.
Yeah, definitely. He's a fantastic doctor, and I can understand why the racing community appreciates him so much and trusts him. And I mean, basically every driver who has a broken bone that needs surgery, he's the one that they wait for. They request. I mean, Tony Kanaan's even in the film talking about how he got a broken wrist in Japan in an accident, and he told everybody in Japan that he was going to get back on a flight to America, and nobody was going to operate on him until Terry Trammell. Could be the one who looked at it and made the decisions and finally operated to fix his wrist. So I think he said that was about a 48-hour process just in travel before he ended up in surgery, because he only trusted Dr. Trammell.
Yeah, I got to tell you, as soon as I get done with this interview, I'm going to go jump back in the book, because you're right. It's one of these kind of books that I'll probably burn through it, by today, because it's one of those. This book is so, it captures you, and it talks about real-world stories, and if you're a motorsports enthusiast, you'll remember a lot of the stories that are in the book. If you're not a motorsports enthusiast, that makes it even a better read, because it gives you a look of what the motorsport community is like, what it takes to keep these drivers safe, and the people that work under probably the most difficult situations being at the track and, you know, having to run the medical facility. And the story in the book shows it coming from absolutely, I use this jokingly, as a box of Band-Aids and some Advil to a full-blown first-class trauma center.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that I think is so fascinating about this story and really grabbed me, especially when it was written and when I first read it. A lot of sporting leagues, you know, different sports around the world, the idea had always been, how can we keep the athletes on the field or playing the game? And so it was like pain management, and it wasn't always necessarily taking care of their long-term best interest. And I was struck by the recognition in American racing, you know, because it was so dangerous, that they really had to be proactive and take care of their drivers, that these were prized athletes, and these are, you know, they needed to be protected and treated. And so they really started a program first to be really well in the reaction to a crash. So they, you know, they put it together where they would bring the right trucks and the right equipment and make sure that they responded in a certain way at a certain pace, so that nobody was sitting around, you know, getting further injured because the care wasn't delivered immediately. And they started being really successful with that. But those guys didn't stop there. They said, okay, now that we're getting this under control, how can we proactively prevent things? And they started looking at it from a perspective of, let's figure out through scientific studies of the cars, the way that the cars crash, what the barriers are like, how to, you know, lessen every impact. They know that there's going to be accidents in racing. That's just the nature of it. You put people competing in automobiles where they have split-second reactions. They know there's going to be crashes, but how can we make that car crash in a way that it doesn't affect the driver? And I think that the statistic was that by, you know, the mid-90s, you are as likely to be injured in a car accident in Indianapolis going 225 or 230 miles an hour, lap after lap, as you would on the highway driving 30 miles an hour in a car crash.
All right. Well, I tell you, Michael, you know, it was totally a joy meeting you. Like I said, getting the book. Unfortunately, this interview won't air until Sunday, but I have to find out how long the theater will have it in the studio. It starts Friday here in town at Parkway Plaza in El Cajon. So once I go tomorrow, I'll do an update on air prior to airing this interview.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be playing there all week. If it does
really well, it's always possible
to be invited to, you know, play for another week. We're already playing in Indianapolis and in a couple other markets and right now, and I believe we're going to be asked to stay on in Indianapolis for another week because the demand's so high, so it's always possible.
How's the response been so far?
And so far, we've just been, you know, bowled over. We kind of expected the fan response to be what it has been, which has just been fantastic. Everybody who sees it is really touched by the film, and they get it, and it just makes them more proud of, you know, the sport and the series that they're a fan of because they get to see, you know, the things that they've maybe anecdotally heard a little bit about, but the nuts and bolts, you know, protecting their guys, they're just really ecstatic about it so far.
Right. By the way, I have to tell you, Jeremy Bonds, he was a PR person that reached out. So I sent him the video. He came back. He goes, oh, my gosh, I had no idea you guys had done this much already. I says, we're not done yet. I got a new friend in Michael Miles.
Well, I really do.
I can't wait to see the movie, and I can't wait to interview you again once I finish the book. Keep up the good work, and hopefully this will motivate you to do more backroom stories of something I think is very, very rewarding to anybody out there that might even want to get into this.
All right, folks, welcome back. You're listening to Racer Radio on FM 96.1 AM 1170. The Answer. This segment's brought to you by Barona Circle Track, BaronaSpeedway.com. If you want to check out all the racing action, and it's getting close to the end, so if you haven't been out there, you need to take a run out there. El Cajon Ford is the sponsor of this segment. El Cajon Ford, if you're looking for new, used, service, parts, commercial, build you a work truck, El Cajon Ford is it. American made. They sell nothing but American made. Check these guys out at ElCajonFord.com, or just take a run down to 1595 East Main Street, or take a look at the racetrack. You might see the owner and his sons out there racing. So it's all about family. Go ahead and join the family at El Cajon Ford. Hey, normally we've got the folks from Barona calling in. I left my cell phone at home, if you can believe that. So needless to say, I wasn't able to remind Dirt Dude to call in. I know Troy Salazar is out at Cocopah for the event out there. So I had my good buddy Jim Esposito at KUSI this morning, and he's got an event coming up next Saturday. It's not motorsports, but it'll put a smile on your face just like a dirt race would. Jim, tell us all about Wavecrest.
Hey, Dave, how you doing today? You know, Wavecrest is the longest-running wooden car show in the country, and I'm a resident of Encinitas, and I didn't even know about it for the first 20 years and until I bought a car. And we have over 300 cars that will be showing up next Saturday at Moonlight Beach. It's a great way to end the summer. We're going to have music. We're going to have food. We're going to have tikis on the beach. It's basically, we're calling it this year the Wavecrest Beach Party. And we make all our money by selling shirts and beautiful posters, and to see 200 Woodies in one parking lot is pretty amazing.
It really is, and you've got hula dancers out there, and we're talking original, I think. Are you going to have them back?
Well, we actually have some different things this year. We're going to have a band called the Hula Girls, who all actually do hula and actually sing. So it's we're trying to draw a much younger crowd this year. We, you know, us Woody owners who have owned these cars for years, you know, we've started to grow older, and our children are coming to the event, and they like the event. They said, well, you know, we need some more fun stuff here.
Right.
So this year for Wavecrest, we're really trying to change it up a little bit. It is our 40th year. And it's amazing that it all started as a little contest on the beach with some surfers at the Del Mar Hotel, a hotel in Del Mar called the Wavecrest. That's been long, long gone.
Oh.
And here we are 40 years later. We're still having this event, gathering of cars that started off with six cars. Is now over 200 every year.
And you get cars from all over the United States. There's a lot of people. Because don't you have the longest drive trophy?
Absolutely. We have a person that has driven here almost every year from Florida. He usually trailers a car, but we also have a person who's won the longest driving distance award. Maybe about seven times he's driven from Oklahoma. We've had people come from Canada. It's kind of an international event. In fact, a gentleman had contacted me on the website a couple days ago and asked me, you know, and if anyone's interested, please go to sandiegowoodies.com. That's Woodies. And you could see the whole schedule for Wavecrest. But this one gentleman contacted me. He's coming from Germany. And he's got a Woody in Germany, which I thought was pretty cool.
Wow.
He has an American Pontiac.
No kidding. A Pontiac, no less.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And the thing, and you have a complete section of Minis, like the Mini Coopers. But these are
exactly.
little countrymen, little Woody wagons. And you have a pretty good group of those. I was very, very impressed.
And, you know, it's good that you bring that up, because those cars have become the entry car for people interested in the Woody world,
mm-hmm,
because they're
mm-hmm.
affordable, they're fun. And, you know, most of these cars, as we talked about this morning, were throwaway cars in the 60s.
Sure.
And they became the surf vehicles. And the culture of Wavecrest is really a community event, which, you know, celebrates not only surf and the Woodies, but, you know, it's the end of the summer, and here you're at Moonlight Beach. And what's really fun about it for everyone in the community, it's like the last weekend of the year, and get everyone out to enjoy the whole weekend, have some good fun.
Well, it's funny. I was going to ask you this morning, and I never got around to it, but I had some folks on Friday, and it's for the Cackle Fest up at Barona Drags. And this guy rolls up in a 64 Ford Country Squire wagon, Woody.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. My son had one of those.
Yeah, so
he went to he had a 65, and it was a Country Woody wagon, and he bought it up at a Santa Cruz Woody show. And he called it Blueberry. It was dark blue, and it had it all built up the motor, and that's what got him involved with kind of the Woody culture also. You know, as we're finding out, you know, these cars are, a lot of them that were built by locals – A lot of these cars have now are disappearing and going into museums.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fabulous collection of Ford Woodies built by a gentleman named Nick Alexander a number of years ago in Los Angeles. And that group of cars was, you know, he had one of every Ford Woody ever built, Ford and Mercury. And he sold that at Pebble Beach about 6 or 7 years ago. And it's really was great to see all of those cars in one place. It's neat to see the evolution of those cars from the early 30s to the early 50s.
Well, and the point I was going to make is I said, dude, you got to go to Wavecrest next week. He goes, oh, I can't go to Wavecrest. I go, what do you mean you can't go to Wavecrest? Oh, no. This isn't real wood. This is plastic. I don't want to. Oh, no. I go, they are going to be fine if you bring that thing in. Are you? Oh, no, I can't.
Well, our issue out there has always been parking. And, you know,
it is.
You know, we just cannot get enough cars there. I mean, we shoehorn cars into the street. But the nice thing is that, you know, we've been doing this in the city of Encinitas since 1990. And since the city incorporated in the late 80s, they've really embraced this event. In fact, the mayor a couple of years ago declared Encinitas the woody car capital of the world. And it was kind of a cool little thing for us to have a little feather in our cap. But, you know, having the longest running car show for wooden cars, it's kind of the Super Bowl for anyone who's in this hobby.
So it's free to come to. You can go down here free. Now, if you want to buy swag to help keep the show going or if you want to buy food, you know, you're more than welcome. And you'll see some of the most unique gifts. I don't know. Are you going to have the guy there that does the coasters, but he has pictures of like Woody's on it. I bought a set last year.
It's so interesting. We have, you know, this year we have some different vendors on the beach, and we decided to kind of broaden the appeal. You know, the guys like to go to the event, you know, to kick the tires. The wife's going, now what are we supposed to do? So
right. We've
got some fun activities on the beach. We've got some fun activities for the kids. We've got a face painter. We're going to have great music. We have the Mardells, if anyone knows the Mardells.
Oh, yeah.
They do their show at the Bahia and you know once a week, and it's pretty expensive, but we're going to have them all day, and also their other band, the Hodads, are going to be there. So it'll be a lot of music, a lot of festivities. It's, as we call it, it's the end of the year beach party hosted by the San Diego Woodies and the Wavecrest Committee.
All right, so go to www.sandiegowoodies, that's woodies.com. Check out the schedule, grab the kids, because it's just like going to a history lesson on the beach, having tons of fun. Jim, thanks a lot. See you next Saturday.
Yes, bring your sunscreen, Dave.
You got it, brother. FM 96.1, AM 1170, The Answer. Folks, welcome back. You're listening to Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170. The Answer. The segment's brought to you by Paris Auto Speedway, fastest half-mile dirt track on the West Coast, as far as I'm concerned. If you know of one goes faster, you let us know. 18700 Lake Paris Road in Paris, California. Go to their website. Racing's coming to a close here pretty soon, and you're definitely going to want to go up, especially during some of the championship runoffs. And nobody knows more about Paris Auto Speedway than Brody Roa. Brody, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave.
Hey,
Bjorn. Thanks for having me.
I left my phone at home. Have you ever left your phone at home? Oh, my Lord.
It feels like you left a hand at home, huh?
I didn't know. I didn't know who was going to call in. In fact, I had an interview I did with Matt DiBenedetto plugged in just in case. Well, actually, I knew Scott would call in. I knew somebody would call in, so yeah, it's great. So, what have you been up to, man? You've been rocking it. I think you just came back from a big, big long race event.
Yeah. Last week, 2 weeks ago, we had a California Sprint Week, and just about 15 minutes ago, I got home from a race in Arizona last night. So,
you're down at Cocoa.
Yeah, been busy.
Went down to Cocoa Paw.
No, we ran at Canyon Speedway Park last night.
Oh, that's right. That's one track I need to get them on air and get them to talk about. I hear a lot of good things about that track.
Yeah, it's a racy. I don't know how what size they call it, a quarter mile or a third or something like that. But
oh my,
it's a tight little joint, and but it carries a lot of speed. So it was a really racy racy track last night. I thought.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. How'd you do?
We won.
Oh, so, I guess that makes it racing.
Yeah, and in a somewhat new car to us. You know, after our long trip up north for California Sprint Week, we decided to the team here decided to park our 91 car for the rest of the year. So just to get our ducks back in a row. And so I jumped in a Tanner Grouse number 34 last night. We I got to run for him once our first race of the year in Vegas, and won the first night there and ran third or fourth the second night, and then we were able to pick up a win again last night with the 410 in. So
jeez, I mean, that's pretty good jumping from one car to the next, because you know they're not identical.
Yeah, they're everybody kind of does something a little different with their setups and sure, you know, how they run the car and their shock package and whatnot. So it Tanner, I knew from running his car at the beginning of the year, it's a good piece, and you know, he brings a quality car to the track that will run all night and is reliable and has speed in it, and he doesn't do anything crazy, you know. So yeah, it's always cool running with Tanner.
And I imagine it must be pretty comfortable with your setup, because you don't probably don't have to do a lot to it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I kind of just, you know, showed up and, you know, brought my seat and my gear bag, and you know, we rolled in with all his setup and his shocks and, you know, everything. And
mm-hmm.
Last night was a little bit of a curveball. They had some monsoon weather rolling in, so we skipped hot laps, went straight to qualifying.
Mm.
And so I didn't get any laps in the car. You know, it's the first time Tanner's had a 410 in that car, so it's kind of new to him too. And
wow,
just jumped straight to qualifying, and you know, it was a little snug for me. I don't like a real tight race car, so he wrenched on it all night, and he got it obviously pretty good for the feature.
Well, you know, I mean, I know you don't want to hear this, but you're a racer's racer. I mean, you're the type of driver that could get into a car, and even though it's not your car, you can figure out how to squeeze the most you can out of it. And you've been doing that for what? How many years?
Oh, I've been running sprint cars now since 2010, so 9 years now.
Yeah, 9 years.
Been a little while.
I know, but every time I talk to you, or every time Scott posts something on social media, you're right there. I mean, you're either winning it or you're at least in the top five from what I've seen. I mean, I haven't looked at your whole layout, but you just seem to me, and I've always been impressed by you as a racer's racer. You're the kind of guy, if I decided I was going to get into racing, you'd probably be the guy I would hire, because you take all the guesswork out of driving. I mean, unless there's a mechanical issue, there's a real good chance you're going to win. And I think that's due to seat time, consistency, and your head screwed on right.
Hey, well, I appreciate that. You know, when we started our family program, you know, back in 2010 with this deal, and
mm-hmm.
we went quite a few years where we just ran, you know, kind of mid pack, and well, I figured out what I was doing, you know, and how to drive these things. And I don't know, a couple years ago, for some reason, everything, you know, something in my head clicked, I think. And,
uh-huh.
you know, now I can, I still haven't figured out that 2-lap qualifying deal. We could get rid of that, if it were up to me.
Yeah. What would you say? I mean, I'm sure you've thought about it on a regular basis. What would you say was the turning point to your career?
I don't really know. You know, I had that big crash. I don't know if that was a part of it. You know, I don't want to say I was scared or something before, you know, but I had that big crash at Oval Nationals in like 2014, you know, and spent a couple of days in the hospital and whatnot. And then for whatever reason, the year after, everything just started rolling.
Maybe you jarred something loose in your head or something that gave you that.
Yeah, maybe I had too many bolts tight in my head. Maybe I need another screw loose or something, right?
There you go. I know. And it's funny because, you know, when you talk to drivers, you know, that all of a sudden it's just like, wow, it's a turnaround. And you know, I can't do anything wrong. I mean, I qualify well, everything's going well, I haven't gotten any mishaps. Yeah, I know. If people could if people could figure out motorsports and racing, they'd make a lot of money, but I don't think anybody really understands it. Totally.
Oh, yeah. No kidding, huh?
Yeah, I really don't think they understand it. It's totally insane. So how you doing sponsor-wise? Who you got?
We're doing good sponsor-wise. You know, we got we got a lot of guys that have been on board for a long time with me and the 91 car and the Deer Performance team, you know, HD Industries and Burris Racing and biker Bruce Fisher. They've all three of those guys have been on board just about since day one of this deal, and you know, continue to support us and understood when we decided to, you know, park our stuff for the rest of the year. And you know, kind of, you know, we got some maintenance to do and kind of get our stuff right again. So they're still they're huge supporters of mine. I wouldn't be in the position I am right now if it wasn't for those guys. So
sure. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with the 91? Are you going to do an extensive remake, or are you just going to do just general maintenance?
Yeah, we just got to go through everything. All our, you know, the California Sprint Week, we we got three rear ends. You know, we had one in each car. We got a, you know, two cars. Uh-huh. Complete cars, and then we had a spare. And when we got home from there, we didn't, you know, we don't have one to put back in a car. So it was just one of those weeks, you know, where we got to kind of, you know, go through everything. And, you know, the last couple of months has been a little rough, you know, killing the car when we went back to Indiana. You know, that's not a cheap trip to begin with.
Right.
And then we killed the car back there. So it's just a little rebuilding and just get all our stuff freshened up and come back strong next year.
Yeah, because you just want to go. I mean, you know, people don't realize, but you got to change everything that's a wear item. You got to do tie rod ends. You got to do ball joints, differential. Because, I mean, you put that car through its paces, let me tell you. I mean, and you know, and you want it to you want to be fresh.
Yeah, yeah, you got to keep stuff fresh. I mean, when you start getting stuff that's, you know, a little old on the car, you know, if people don't realize how expensive these things really are, and you know, if you're kind of thrashing just to get something together, and you know, a $12 Heim brakes or something, you know, and you junk a car, you know, you junk the $20,000 roller for, you know, a $12 part. So it's just stuff like that. We got to come, you know, go through and try to get our, you know, some finances back in line. And,
sure.
You know, it's been a rough couple months. So, but you know, I'm glad that we got some opportunities to finish off the year driving other people's stuff. And, we'll keep racing this year and, you know, work on our stuff for next year.
Well, I'm going to bug you again when you get the 91 all the way you want it. Give me an ETA on when you think you'll have it ready. And seriously, I'd love to get that car on KUSI TV. You know, give your sponsors some TV time and you and your crew. I mean, so whenever you're ready to pull the trigger on that bad boy and get some airtime, I'm happy to do it for you.
Yeah, of course. We'll be in touch for sure.
Sure. So, yeah. So what's your long-term goal? I mean, how old are you?
I'm 28 now.
Oh, you're way young. You still got plenty of years left. So are you going to still just leave this as a kind of a semi hobby, or would you like to go pro?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I've always said since day one, you know, if the opportunity comes up, I wouldn't say no.
Of course not.
But you know, as it sits, you can't beat being able to drive sprint cars almost every weekend. So
yeah, that's no kidding.
I'm more than happy doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, you're totally blessed. And the ride and drives are you know, the drive in and drive, those are really cool too, where you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I only got to do that 3 years in a row. I got to do that at the Coronado Speed Festival. And I was so spoiled. There was no way I was going to go get a car and work on it myself. I was so spoiled. It was terrible.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, dude, people have no idea. And if it's not one thing, it's another. Even though it's a small car, there's not a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of moving parts.
There's a lot of maintenance that goes into them, that's for sure.
I'm telling you, it's enough to drive you crazy. All right, buddy. Well, hey, thank you very much for calling in. I've got to get you some Racer Radio stickers for the 91 car. So I'm going to bug Scott to have him get, you know, I'll mail them to him and then he can get them to you.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
You... Everybody come out and check us out in the Dwight Cheney number 42 next week at Parasado Speedway.
Oh, okay. Number 42, folks. Check it out. Then go down after the races. Meet Brody and the crew. Trust me, it's well worth the wait. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, I've got another interview I want to run. And this is all about the BorgWarner Trophy. You may not be aware that when you win the Indianapolis 500, you do not get that big honking trophy. I'm going to tell you how you get a trophy if you're lucky enough to win it. Right here on Racer Radio, FM 96.1, AM 1170, The Answer. Folks, welcome back. You're listening to Racer Radio on FM 96.1 AM 1170. The Answer. This is a segment brought to you by Certified Car Clinic, located at 11370 North Woodside Avenue in Santee. Go to certifiedcarcare.net for all your automotive needs, whether it's your everyday car, your sand car, your dirt car, your race car. The boys down there can take care of every bit of it. In-house dyno to make sure once the job is done, they can get you the maximum horsepower that you're looking for out of your vehicle. Again, whether it's a streetcar, tow vehicle, maybe an RV, they work on it all. And if you want to kind of spruce up the underhood of your car with braided lines, well, they have a company there called Hose Specialties, Trick Plumbing. Go to hosespecialties.com. You can get braided lines for oil, water, the whole nine yards. They make them custom to your specifications, so you don't have to try doing it yourself. And if you've ever tried it, you'll poke holes in your finger and they hurt really bad. Certified Car Clinic or hosespecialties.com. Check them out. All right. You know, when you win the Indy 500, which I'm sure you all have, you do not get that great big trophy with all the heads on it. No. That stays at the Indianapolis 500 Museum. But what they do is they give the owner and driver their own mini BorgWarner. And this year's winner got quite a different type of a trophy, Simon Pagenaud. So take a listen to this interview. You're going to get a kick out of it. Let me see. My guest on this one is Michelle Collins. She's the director of marketing, PR Global, and talent acquisition. So take a listen.
All right, folks. Hey, I'm sure you've remembered the Indianapolis 500 and who the winners were. Well, guess what? If you don't remember, Michelle Collins, she's director of marketing and PR and global talent acquisitions on the line. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Excellent. So tell us about the presentation on Monday. That had to be huge with driver Simon Pagenaud and team owner Roger Penske.
It was a really exciting day for us. We really appreciate that Roger Penske and team allowed us to be a part of their annual team breakfast with all of the drivers and pit crews and all of the workers from the Team Penske side. We were able to present Roger with his 18th baby Borg, and Simon Pagenaud, this year's winner, with his baby Borg. And we had a special surprise on that for him. I'm not sure if you heard about that.
Uh-uh.
We put the face of Simon's dog, Norman, who rocketed into social media fame after the race. We put his face next to Simon's on the base of Simon's trophy. So that was a pretty cool surprise for him.
That is, and my wife will be forever thrilled because she's a big dog person, so she'll love that. Wait till I tell her, she won't believe it. So, now, for folks that maybe don't know what a baby Borg is, why don't you explain it to them?
So as you know, the original BorgWarner trophy stays on display throughout the year at the museum at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And obviously the drivers do not get to keep that as much as I'm sure they'd like to. So we give them a small replica copy of the trophy. And for the driver, it's on a marble base where we put the same copy of the face that's on the large trophy with the engraving of their name, how fast they won, and, of course, the year that they won. And then the owner of the team gets to keep a small version of the trophy as well. Theirs is on a base with no face, but it just is in commemoration of the driver they had that won that year. So it's a really neat keepsake for them. It was really cool to see how Roger Penske has his displayed. If you go into the lobby, he has the trophy along with the helmet of the driver that won that year for every year that he's won. It was pretty impressive to see.
Goosebump City, man, I'm telling you, Goosebump City. So I would love to have seen the look on Simon's face when he found his dog on the trophy. Was he blown away?
He, I think, was truly shocked. We were able to keep it a surprise for him. We had some people working behind the scenes. His fiancée, Haley, provided us with a lot of photos of the dog that we were able to give to the sculptor, Will Behrens. And this was actually the first non-human that Will has sculpted. So it was something new for him. And, you know, we talked about it and we said, we've got to do this. And he was game for it too, which was really cool. But I think Simon was truly shocked. When he saw it, when our CEO, Fred LaSalle, gave him the trophy, he took a look and I know he said something in French, but he was really shocked. And I think pretty emotional about it too. It was really cool.
I tell you. Yeah, I know. I'm kind of getting a tad bit, you know, misty-eyed myself. Because, I mean, let's face it, you know, your dog is your best friend. I don't care what anybody says.
Yep, this is true. And
but,
this year
we also now you started did. Something. What if somebody has a cat? Now you're going to end up putting a cat on the trophy.
Yeah, right? I don't know. It could happen. Never say never.
Oh, I know. I know. You guys are so good. And it's just a great thing to do, giving back to the driver, the owner, and the fans, because, you know, the fans will just be, they'll just love that to death, I'm telling you. That's just awesome.
Definitely. And what really sparked this idea is everybody remembers the iconic photo of Simon in Victory Circle after he won the race with the IndyCar fan club, and that's when they brought the dog up to him, and he's howling. And that's really what started the social media buzz. We picked up on that and just started thinking, you know what, maybe we should try this. So
yeah.
The next step is everybody wants to get that photo on the ticket. That's out of our hands, but we'll leave that to IndyCar.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. Well, I tell you, now let me ask you this. If somebody wanted to see the presentation, is it up on anybody's website, like the Indy 500?
No, it's not. We do have some B-roll footage of that I'm sure through you, if you have any inquiries, Dave, we can help share with them.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm just saying, I mean, I'm sure the general public would love to see it.
Oh, yeah. And it's all over social media. We have photos on our website. It's been shared and reshared many times. So I would just suggest checking out Twitter or Instagram, you know, plug in Norman Pagano and you can have a field day looking at the photos and reading the comments.
Okay, Norman Pagano. Okay, there you go. Let me write that down. He named his dog Norman.
Yep.
Well, my wife raises championship Rottweilers and Dachshunds. And all the Rotties are named after cars.
That's awesome.
I'm so down the list, I can't even begin to tell you.
That is too funny. And
it
I
is.
Should mention something else that we had done is new this year. We made a donation to a charity of Simon's Choice, which we'll be doing going forward for all of the winning drivers. And Simon chose Indy Humane, the Humane Society in Indianapolis. And I think they're going to be able to do a lot with the $20,000 donation we made on Simon's behalf.
Wow. We're really That's amazing. All right. Well, I know you're, I can see you're grinning from ear to ear, so I'm probably going to let you go because you got things to do. And by the way, smart move of Borg Warner picking up Kathy Graham. You guys got a star there, let me tell you.
You're way too kind, Dave. Thank you.
It's the truth. I was crushed when you left your other job, but now I'm really happy. By the way, I wear my blue trophy shirt just about once a week. And you would not believe the comments I get off of it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. That's what we were hoping would happen. So thank you so much. That's awesome.
And it's a cool shirt. But everybody's asking me, where can you get that? And I said, I don't know. Let me find out.
People. You have to be a very special person to have one of those shirts is what you can tell them. So.
Well, I feel very special, and I can't thank you enough. This is absolutely awesome. You guys have a fabulous week, and I cannot wait for next year's Indianapolis 500.
Thanks, Dave. We'll keep you in the loop on anything else we have going on this.
Absolutely. You make sure you do that, and I'm going to start working on trying to figure out how to get back there because that's definitely on my bucket list. All right, kids.
Cool.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your day.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Bye-bye.
All right, say hi to Norman for me.
Will do. Bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Norman the dog. Who would have their dog's head put on a Borg Warner trophy just because they won the Indy 500? But that's the cool thing about the Borg Warner. And Kathy Graham, I used to work with her and Honda. And when she left Honda, I was totally crushed, depressed, bummed. Now she's at Borg Warner, and I'm having more fun with her than you can shake a stick at. This lady is awesome. Hey, by the way, Gun Sports Radio's right next. You don't want to touch your dial because we have got news and information that you'll only get one place, and that is Gun Sports Radio. And we've decided to kick it up from a social media point of view, a podcasting point of view. It's all right there at gunsportsradio.com. So if you happen to miss a show, you'll be able to go back and take a listen. They're all numbered. We're up to 163. Can you believe that? 163. So please go visit our website at www.gunsportsradio.com. You can get us on Facebook.com and guns at Gunsports Radio. All right, we're going to take a quick break here. But when we come back, we are going to have a wild show going on right here on FM 96.1, AM 1170, The Answer. Keep smiling until then.
The clouds and we're together.
Just sing a song and bring the sunny weather.
Happy trails to you till we meet again.
Racer Radio on AM 1170 The Answer is sponsored by Love Radio Network.